This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Today we are talking about mental health again, but from a slightly different perspective, which I think is going to complement the other couple of episodes that we've done as well. Let's jump into the intro, tell you some more about it. Let's go.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution or one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviours.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding Safety, crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Blue.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is the YouTube channel and podcast doing exactly what it says on the tin. So if you're new here, hit that subscribe button, hit the bell and all of those magical algorithm buttons. Rebranding Safety is the campaign of a company called Risk Fluent, which I run with my amazing wife, Sherry. And we offer numerous services. We offer the technical services, like normal health and safety stuff, cash, working at height, 45,001, things like that. We offer transformational services, like behavioral stuff, cultural stuff, strategy stuff. And then we also offer some media services. So two types of media customers. There's people that not work in our health and safety side that want us to take Rebranding Safety styles videos and create them some videos about how they manage their stuff, like an awareness video or something for their training or an induction video. And we take all of our gear, all of our skills, all of our knowledge, but also more importantly, our style, which is modern, entertaining and fun. And we make you a bespoke video. Additionally, there is another side to it where maybe you're listening to this and you have a product or service that you would like to build brand awareness for to safety and operational leaders, and that's our audience. So there's opportunities for branded videos, there's opportunities for kind of advertisement within the podcast, so there's that that we offer as well. But most of you that are listening are operational safety professionals, so if you're thinking, you know, I'd really like a video in our induction, or I'd really like to add some videos that we can send round as a little reminder maybe of, like, this is how we manage lockout tagout at our company, or here's a little reminder of our values or our principles, for example, and then we can come along and do that for you, whether you want to be in front of the camera or you want us to be in front of the camera for you. We're flexible, babes. If you're interested in any of that stuff, go to riskfluentlimited.com or email me, james@riskfluentlimited.com, and we'll have a chat, we'll work it out, and we'll go from there, peeps. Okay, so in the podcast today, we are talking to a lovely lady called Sheila. Great name. It's my grandma's name, that is. Outstanding name. So Sheila runs another podcast. We don't see it like that. She runs a lovely podcast, and she does it with a really nice guy called Peter. I'll let her tell some more about that. But essentially, it's all about mental health in the workplace. And today, we thought this would be a really nice complementary episode to some of the other episodes we've done around the topic of mental health. So we've had Asher on a while ago, who gave a really personal experience and how she then turns that into kind of hypnotherapy and personal therapy and things like that, and works with companies as well. Then we had Alex come on, talk to us about his personal experiences of the outcome of burnout, and essentially told a really personal perspective. And then today, Sheila's going to come on as she works with companies to help them kind of operationalize this, trying to understand how it needs to be part of your organization. And in effect, it's good to have it part of your kind of risk management. So today, essentially, that is what we were talking about, kind of the whys, hows and the what fors of mental health from a risk management strategy, I suppose, perspective. Anyway, I'm going to stop waffling because these are probably the worst bulk recorded intros and outros I've ever done in my entire life. And hopefully Sherry is cutting these up to make them look good. If not, I'm sorry. Let's jump into today's episode. Note to self, don't ask James to bulk record intros on a Monday at 7:10. All right, Sheila, welcome to Rebranding Safety. Thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me, James.
Yeah, good. How are you in general? Anyway, are you enjoying the weather?
I am very happy when the sun shines. I'm very miserable when it's raining, although I'm from Manchester, so I should be used to the rain.
Oh, yeah, you must be miserable a lot.
No, that's why I moved down south. I live down the south of the country now. I always say it's more technicolour down here. And there's a certain point on the M6 where I know I'm nearly in the north.
More miserable as you go up north.
No. I'm happy when I'm going up north. But there's a point where the yellow self storage is on the M6. And as soon as you go past there, it's almost like a line in the sky. So it turns from blue to grey. And I'm like, yep, I'm nearly home.
Just a wall of rain. That's funny that is. I think, like, I remember talking to a guy that does like mental health stuff in Canada, and he was saying, oh, some people have this thing where, like, I can't remember the name of it, but you have this thing that, like, their mood is really tied to the weather. So when the weather's bad, they're
SAD.
Yeah, I think it was something like that. And I am so like that. The second the sun is out, I feel so much better. And I think a lot of people are like that. But, like, for me, I'm so much happier, like, noticeably.
Absolutely.
I feel it in my bones. Like, I'm excited to get out of bed. Whereas when it's wet and horrible, I'm just, like, miserable.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I totally get that 100%. Yeah.
It's very strange, very strange. Yeah. Right, do you want to give us a quick introduction of kind of what you do, who you are, what you do, and maybe how you came to do what you do as well would be interesting.
Yeah, sure. So my name's obviously Sheila. We've already said that, established who I am. And I'm on a company called BMR Health and Wellbeing. So my background is in operations, quality management, supply chain, business improvement. So I spent 30 years almost, it's giving my age away here, but I spent almost kind of 25, 30 years in that space. And during my time kind of working in that space, I obviously had to manage staff. I was one of those managers that came through the process, you know, with that attitude of the 80s and the 90s, where we just, you know, we made the tough stuff, you know, mental health, what's that? That's people in the loony bin. You just need to pick yourself up and get on with it. And be resilient, basically.
If you're depressed, just don't be depressed. Just get up.
Yeah, just smile, be happy, pull yourself together, you know?
Come on.
Yeah. And basically in one of my previous roles, I was working in an organization. We had people within that business, is relatively small number of staff, but people that would struggle with mental health issues, from kind of occasional challenges to kind of longer term issues. And as a manager in that business, I went through lots of different things. So one would be frustration, because I wanted them to just pull themselves together and do something about it. Yeah. Frustration then when you would look for support within the organization and nobody else knew what to do, but because it was mental health, let's just avoid it like the plague and not touch it. So therefore you end up with a lot of, and we hear it a lot, talked about a lot, but this presenteeism piece where you pay people to turn up to work, but they're not getting the best out of work. You're not getting the best out of them. And nobody's really happy. So we recognize, you know, through my experiences of work, through being, you know, the manager that thinks just need to pull yourself together, to then actually having staff that were struggling. And then actually by the age of 40, I unexpectedly was with child. Mm. And, you know, having a child after a certain age and then having this, or, you know, these different changes in my life, things became more challenging and my work-life balance changed. I had other priorities and I started to struggle with actually being a working mum. And then for the first time in my kind of, you know, 40 odd years on this planet, back then, I started to struggle. So, and I think a lot of the times until you actually start to struggle, or have got somebody close to you that starts to struggle, it's really difficult to empathize with mental health. It can be really, really difficult to empathize with somebody that's struggling, especially somebody that might be struggling over a long period of time, because you're just thinking, for goodness sake, just pull yourself together.
Mm.
It's not difficult. Mm. But actually, once you then start to experience that, you do understand how difficult it is. And it's not a case of just pulling yourself together. You can't just snap out of depression. You can't just get over anxiety. So that really started to open my eyes up to how employers have a real need to support people in their business, not just because we're human beings and it's the right thing to do, but also because by not doing that, we're leaving money on the table. Let's be honest, we're leaving money on the table because we'll miss opportunities. We're not getting the best out of people. We're just paying people to turn up and to be present and not to be doing. So, you know, I recognize the fact that, you know, if this was a production line and something was broken in the production line, yeah, and we were getting faulty widgets coming off the production line, we would get to work on the root cause, be it the machine that's causing the widgets to be broken. Yet when it comes to workplace mental health and individuals, we don't get to work on the root cause. We get to work on either, we focus on the individual, and we either focus on the individual and we do nothing and we just let it slide and hope it gets better. Or we focus on supporting the individual with interventions like mental health, first aid and employee assistance. So I started BMR Health and Wellbeing to basically bring in some of these continuous improvement principles and principles like, you know, Kaizen, you know, just continue small incremental changes done consistently over time, but apply to workplace mental health programs so that we weren't just, so that organizations are not just doing initiatives. Because by the definition of an initiative, it starts and then it finishes.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we did quality as an initiative, if we did safety as an initiative, and if we did customer satisfaction as an initiative, we wouldn't have very successful businesses. So why is the welfare and the productivity of our staff often associated with initiatives rather than whole organizational, operational, systemic and cultural approach?
Yeah.
And that's what we do. So it's a very long answer to your question. Sorry.
No. I mean, as elevator pitches go, as long as it's a really tall building, that's really good.
That's it's really, a tall building.
As long as it's like a high rise.
Yeah, that's what we aim for.
I'm exactly the same as you. If someone's like, what do you do, James? I'm like, well, back in 2001. I think you've hit on quite a lot of interesting points there as well. Like, we've recently just done another podcast with a gentleman called Alex, who I do quite a lot of stuff with. He comes to the PM community, and he randomly messaged me like, James, I want to come on the podcast. And I'm like, okay, cool. And he's like, I want to talk about this. And he was like, we were talking about burnout and doing mental health initiative and mental health first aid week and all of this, mental health week and all of this stuff. And he said, but we're not fixing the problem. He said, we're kind of just like putting a plaster over the bullet wound. And when no one wants to actually address the real thing, we're just talking about bean bags and pizza Fridays and stuff like that. So he said, I want to come on and I want to just tell my story about how my burnout led me close to the real edge. And it was a hard conversation. Like, it was one of those podcasts, you run a podcast and we need to make sure that we give a plug of that. It was kind of one of those podcasts where as a host, I didn't really say much. He just told his story and it was, I was kind of beautiful, but like harrowing at the same time. And then we had another lady on a while ago called Asha, who's a who's a hypnotherapist, and she went to hypnotherapy after essentially being pushed right to the edge and experiencing some really, really horrible kind of stress related issues. And now has kind of done the same and has gone out there, started a business, and off she goes trying to stop people experiencing what she's experienced as well. So it's really nice to see. But ultimately, do you think, I'll bring it around to my point now. do you think the issue with it is just like the companies, business owners and so on, they want to do something, but ultimately it's just huge, isn't it? Like, this is really complex and big. Like you say, it's not an initiative. It's like a, Sometimes it could be potentially change the way you operate as an organization. And it could, but you know, you can't just do Pizza Fridays and mental health first aid. Whilst those stuff are probably good, it is, it's a big project. Do you think
it's a consistent project? It's part of culture.
Yeah.
And it's behavior change. And I was recording a podcast yesterday. And you know, one of the things that we were talking about there, you know, was the, and you're probably too young to remember this, James, but, you know, back in the 70s and the 70s, there was the big campaign, the big safety campaign around seatbelts in cars.
Yep.
So clunk, click every trip.
Yep.
And we were chatting about this yesterday, the other day. And, you know, with that was aimed at getting behaviour changed for safety in cars, primarily to men, yeah, and engaging them in a way and speaking to those people in a way that would connect with them, that would encourage them to actually make that behaviour change. That took years of kind of instilling that as a safety culture. Now, we wouldn't get in a car without that, yeah? We wouldn't get in a car and be able to drive off because the beeping would drive you mad for a starters, but it's become so ingrained in culture that it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. And with things like workplace mental health, you know, when I go back again, I'm showing the age here, but you know, back when I first started working, like in the late 80s, you know, BS 575 or ISO 9001, as it's known in today's money, right, was this new ISO standard that was a quality management system that became this framework for how we should structure our business process and make sure we had continuous improvement in around quality. Today, there are thousands, millions of certificates issued worldwide, globally, because this has become an adopted framework. Back when I was putting it in as BS 575, oh, this was a new shiny thing and everyone was a bit scared of it and an auditor would come in and we had to learn this new way of working. And then we all went, well, actually, this actually does bring value. This brings structure. This brings organisation. And actually, it's not set in stone. It's flexible. And then we've got other standards that come out, things like 14001 for the environmental piece. Yep. So these things bring around change. But when we're looking and when businesses are looking at workplace mental health strategies, solutions, programs, they're looking for a quick fix.
Mm.
And there's no quick fix.
Yeah.
This is behavior change. If people in your workplace are becoming ill as a result of work, it's generally not because they are flaky, non-resilient, overly sensitive individuals that are just not very good at coping with life.
Yeah.
It's generally because somebody that would ordinarily be quite a strong and resilient person, so you mentioned two people that you've had on your podcast before, have been stretched and pushed to the limit.
Yeah.
And like an elastic band, as human beings, we're designed to have some level of tension.
Yeah.
Tension motivates us. It makes us do our job. We need some sort of pressure to motivate us to get out of bed in the morning. You know, if we're not going anywhere, we've got nothing to do, we don't set the alarm, where's that motivation to get up? So we need some level of motivation.
Mm.
But when that's stretched and stretched and stretched and stretched, what does an elastic band do?
Mm.
It snaps. It breaks. And that's what we need to look at. We need to look at the workplace. We need these longer term strategies, and we need to look at what we can do in workplaces. So you mentioned before about mental health first aid, health promotion, fruit balls, yoga. Great bookends.
Yeah.
Really great bookends. Yeah. But that's the top end, you know, the front end bookend of health promotion. Yeah. Somebody who's struggling and up to their eyeballs and not on the laptops till 11, 12 o'clock at night and up again at 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
Ain't going to be finding time to go to your yoga classes. Yeah?
Yeah.
These initiatives are put in and people wonder why nobody turns up to yoga on Friday.
Mm.
Yeah. Too busy working through the lunch.
Yeah.
And then you've got the people that actually were struggling, and they just got sick. So those are the ones that were turning up every day. We knew something wasn't quite right, but we don't have the mechanisms in place to capture that or support that. Mm. And they didn't get themselves well. And then we just kind of ignored it and it fixed itself. Yeah. So instead of that happening, that's going to go one way or the other. And instead of that going happening, they go off sick. And they don't go off sick like you do for 3 days with a cold or a bad headache or a migraine. First thing the doctor will do, they'll sign you off for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then another 2 weeks. So it will be a couple of months potentially that people will be out of the organisation. So it's really expensive. It's really expensive. And what we need to be doing as businesses, as business leaders, is really looking at what are the factors in my workplace that are damaging people and causing people to fall over. And, you know, using these health and safety risk management principles that we have in place already, we wouldn't have people turning up to a building site and constantly going up a ladder without a safety harness and falling off scaffolding. We wouldn't just go, here's a team of mental health, physical first aiders. We've got a direct route to the hospital. We can get you in there and get your leg plastered up quick as. And then have a few weeks off and come back. But don't worry, we'll get somebody else to pick up the slack. We won't do that with it. It's not acceptable to do that for physical health.
Yeah.
Yet, actually, that's exactly what we're doing in a lot of instances with psychological health.
Yeah.
And yet the law says that we have the exact same duty of care to risk assess for psychological health, i.e. the health part of the Health and Safety at Work Act, as we do for physical. And in the past, we haven't done that because the focus has been on safety. And yes, there is still safety issues out there, but by and large, it's accepted that we have this duty as an employer to look after safety, and safety is everybody's responsibility. So, you know, you see a dodgy, you know, a guarding on a machine that's not there, you'll report it. Yeah. If you see a pallet in the middle of a walkway, you'll get somebody to move it. So we're built into that. It's second nature. Now we need to do that work, that piece, that education, that behavior change, that culture change, that leadership buy-in on the health piece.
Yeah.
And we're getting there. But it's a slow journey. It's not an overnight fix, like you said. But now there are more tools available to employers. There are more tools available to health and safety professionals. There are more tools available to HR professionals. And we are now seeing roles being developed for well-being directors, for people directors.
Yeah.
So we're starting to see that change. But there's still a huge education piece to be done on what is the right solution. And that's where I really love the fact that, you know, the ISO standards committee have developed an ISO standard. You can see that I'm a bit of a geek. I'm a bit of a fangirl when it comes to ISO standards, when they're used well and implemented well. But there's now this framework, you know, some of the world's best leading health experts in this field, some of the countries that are leading the way, like Canada and Australia in this field, they've all come together to put together a framework of best practice guidance on how to do this. And you take that framework, you don't apply it verbatim, you apply it like you would a 9001 standard or an environmental standard, to fit with your business, to fit with your people, to fit with your organizations. So now somebody's gone and done all the hard work for you. They've just said, this is how you do it. You know, if you're an organization, I can't remember the number, but I think if you're less than £25 million turnover, you even get the standard for free. You don't have to pay £200 to get the standard now from BSI.
Yeah.
You can download it for free straight off the by registering on the website. So the groundwork's been done. What organisations need to do now is say, this is what I'm now going to start to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a gap analysis on where I am, where I should be. I'm going to look at all the tools and all the initiatives that we've put in place, all the money that we're spending, and have a look whether we can measure a usage, a return on investment, that we can quantify what that's doing for us. Because if you can't quantify it, why do it? You can't measure what you're doing. If it can't tell you whether it's having an impact, why do it?
Yeah.
You wouldn't do that in any other area of your business.
No. I was just trying to get the number that of people, but I typed in Google just quickly while she were talking. Then I typed in Google 45,000 free download. And you can read the whole thing online.
Yeah.
So it looks like it's pretty free to everybody.
It is free to, yeah, you can read it online from the ISO website for free to everybody in the world.
Yeah.
And then if you go on to BSI, you can register for a free PDF copy that BSI will email to you if your organisation size is less than 25 million. And another thing about the standard, just to mention, is that you can get certified to the standard. And it's a child standard of ISO 45001. And normally a child standard, you wouldn't be able to get a separate certification for.
Mm-hmm.
But on this particular standard, you can.
Just trying to find, I'll try and find the link for that and put it in the show notes if I can. I can't find the free download one, but yeah. Do you think, because interestingly, you've got 45,003, but prior to 45,003, the HSE had the management standards, which I still highly rate, you know, like
absolutely.
I mean, I haven't done work within 45,003, but I've definitely, when it came out, went on a few webinars, I've read through it, and to me, I'm like, do you know what, there's a lot of echoes of the management standards in here, like, do you think that the fact that, to your point there, the fact that you can now get accredited, so you can get the badge, and it's got like a commercial advantage to it, so you can say to your customers, for example, we're accredited to 45,001 and 3 and 9,019. Do you think like that will help drive this forward? Because it surprises me even to this day, the amount of people that have never heard of the HSE management standards. And I think they are great. I think they're absolutely, I'd go so far to say, I think that is the best piece of work the HSE offers. I think that those management standards, the guide, everything you can download is phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right. They've done a lot of work. And I host a podcast as well with Peter Kelly from the HSE, who was, Peter was involved in the development of the stress management standards. Peter was also involved in the development of 45,003. So he was on the development committee for that. And you're right. It's an absolute great piece of work. And everything that you find in the stress management standards is part and parcel of 45,003. And then the other extra stuff say that the Canadian standards have in place, they've been brought, elements of that have been brought in. So it's best practice from around the world. So why would you not use it? And it's not only best practice, these are frameworks that are suited at a global level. So from different cultural things, different kind of country differences, all of that's been taken into account while this has been done. So I think it will gain traction. If you look at the number of certificates that are out there for ISO 45001 now, they're in the hundreds of thousands, and that's grown hugely. I'm just trying to find the stat now. So I've been going through all my stats this morning, but
it's still quite young, really, isn't it? 45,001. It's still a very young standard. Obviously, there was 18,001 before that, but. As a new standard, I think it's quite a lot different from 18, in my opinion. It's quite a young standard.
It is. It is a very young standard. I'm just trying to find the numbers for you. Now I've got that many blooming stats and numbers around the place. But I think the numbers now are in the hundreds of thousands on how many 45,001 certificates have been issued. And if you overlay 45,003 on that, all the clauses are exactly the same. But what it does is it just really puts the meat around the bones on the psychological risk assessment piece.
Yeah.
And again, people are like, oh, how do we risk assess psychological well-being? Well, we have a fantastic technology tool that allows you, honestly, it's unbelievably fantastic, but it's a whole ISO 45,003 management system. So it's got your educational piece for the whole organisation. Yeah. It's got the well-being tools for the employee. It's got the data analytics, the survey tools, and the risk assessment piece. It's got the measurement and monitoring of improvement actions, so that we can actually start to measure and quantify and correlate well-being initiatives to improvements in productivity, to improvements in retention rates, to improvement in absenteeism. So we're able to do all of that now in one single place in a really simple and systemic way. What it needs is that organizational commitment from top down and also bottom up, because it has to be done in collaboration. There's not one single entity, individual, department that can do this. This needs to be approached in the same way as we approach customer satisfaction, the net promoter scores, our, you know, our quality management numbers. It needs to be done in that way. It has to be operationalized into the business.
Yeah. I think there's something else that you said earlier, which is really important. Like when you said, I love ISOs when implemented correctly.
Yes. So
I feel like you might have had a similar experience with ISOs as I have. Like there is a big difference between implementing for the badge.
Absolutely.
Implementing for impact within your organization.
Absolutely.
I actually like to use, I'm not going to get into politics. I have no support of one person or another publicly on the profile. But I remember during COVID, Nicola Sturgeon said, I want people to act within the spirit of the law, not the word of the law. And I thought that was really nice. And I actually have taken that and use it quite a lot in the, you know, if you're going to do 14 or 9, like implement it with the spirit of it, not the word of it, which absolutely. I really like.
I worked in an organisation previously and they had ISO 9001 certification, right? And I went past the quality department and there were literally piles, and I mean paperwork piles of return notes, right?
Yeah.
And the auditors had come in and managers would have certain individuals in the organisation take days holidays on those days, so the auditors couldn't talk to them because they knew that they'd drop them in it. It was just literally, let's do the bare minimum to get us through the audit, because they didn't understand the value at that time of a well-implemented quality management system. And it was, oh, we need to get a certificate because that's what everybody else is doing. Yeah. You know, we can't be in this game without at least 9001 as a certificate. Yeah. Right. And I came in and I was given the quality department and they were like, okay, so there you go. I was like, great, lovely, fantastic. And started working on it and really just changed the way and brought people along on that journey with me. But don't get me wrong, it took a while, took a couple of years to kind of get that change through. And that's the thing. It does warrant this and it needs this commitment. Can't promise anybody you're going to change anything overnight. Doesn't happen. Change management, change behavior change doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
But anyway, long story short, that company then went on to get to have a fantastically robust 9001 system. Nobody took holidays when the auditors came in. You could send the auditors to talk to anybody, yeah? Because they were following this in the spirit in which it was intended, in a way that served at the business, in the way that protected the business, in a way that grew the business, okay? And then on the top of that, after we got 9001 boxed off and we got that working well, we then went for medical approvals. We then got aerospace approvals, and everything that company does, they can sell off the back of quality.
Mm. Yeah.
And having all of this in place, because that was actually a massive requirement from their customer network. And, you know, we saw that in real tangible results in terms of the, you know, the numbers of returns that were down, you know, first time, you know, on time, every time, first time, you know, delivery rates, all the numbers were in the right place. And that's taking it from not doing it well, doing it to the, the letter of the auditor comes in. It goes, oh, you're not quite conforming to that. There's a cross, there's a non-conformity. And you're like, but I don't need to do that because of this.
Yeah.
No, computer saying, clipboard says no.
Yeah.
You know, that old school kind of approach. And and I think if, you know, the whole point of having these in, they're like a ring fence around a schoolyard to protect the kids, to keep the kids safe. Yeah. And it's the same principle, I think, with ISOs for your business.
Yeah, kind of freedom to operate within that framework, e.g.
And if the framework needs to change the framework. If the process change the process. If that's what needs to happen. If our business has evolved and that's no longer relevant, but that's what continuous improvement is, isn't it? We're constantly evaluating. And because we move at such a fast pace, why would we not want to be doing that?
Mm.
Why would we not do that for staff and culture?
Yeah.
And working practices and work design, you know?
Mm.
You know, talk about 45,003. You know, I remember years ago when we had a warehouse and it was backlogged. It had those attempts, not getting further forward. And it was like, oh my God, it's a disaster. You know, we can't get stuff out to customers on time, blah, 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 blah. Fast forward a couple of years later, right? Like today, we'd call that stress and we'd send people on resilience training. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That wasn't stress and resilience training. It was stress. It was a stressful situation. But that wasn't stressed individuals. And that if that was in today's spotlight, we'd be sending them all on mental health first aid courses and sending them to resilience training. Okay.
But not fixing the problem.
We did back then, because that wasn't the buzzword then,
mm.
is we got somebody in to help. We put everybody on a lean techniques course.
Yeah.
And we got them to all of their activities that they did through that process were targeted at their own working area, their own working environments. You wouldn't recognize the place 2 years further down the line.
Yeah.
And again, another one of those places that we'd take customers around with pride.
Mm.
And, you know, and that wasn't a case of, you know, we had one or two printers in the warehouse serving 16 people, you know, but get everybody a tool belt, get everybody a shadow ball, get everybody a printer. Reorganize your workspace. You know, we're talking about work design and job design, and you know, there's all this job crafting and all this other stuff now that people talk about. But you know, change the way that we do the work to make it more efficient. Everybody's happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's that simple.
I love what you kind of said earlier, and that analogy, and it's very similar to it was pretty much exactly the same, in that I was talking to a client a few weeks or months back, and we ended up talking about stress management and stress risk assessments and stuff. And I said, what do you currently do? Oh, we do like a regular piece of awareness, and then we've got some mental health first aiders and we've got a phone line. I said, okay, cool. So do you think that's good enough? Do you think that's I think it's all right. I said, okay, cool. If I said to you, you're going to have no guarding on your machines, you're not going to manage it, and you use this exact analogy, if you had no guarding on your machine, no nothing, and I said to you, how do you manage safety? And I said, what you do is you tell everyone where the kind of pinch points are and the drawing points are. You don't guard them or anything. And then what you say is, we've got an ambulance on call. Would you say that was good enough? And he was like, well, obviously not. And I was like, well, that's what we do with mental health. That's what you're doing it now. And he was like, not really. And I was like, think about what you've just said. And it took a good 10 minutes, and it was quite a conversation. And I'm thinking, shit, I'm trying to get some work here. And I think I might have pissed him off. and I was like, and then he kind of started to come around, and he was like, do you know what? Actually, I get it. I really liked your bookends analogy. It's kind of like having two bookends and not having the shelf, just holding them together with pressure and hoping that they don't fall.
Yeah.
And we finally got round to the point. And then I said, look, there's a couple of ways to do this. We've got ISO 45003. I said, we could even just start with thinking about the management standards. I said, let's just start there to introduce you to the concept, have a chat about that. And then let's have a read about 45001. So it doesn't, you're not going in kind of the deep end, so to speak. But
that's the thing with this as well. And you know, I was talking to another lady some time ago, and she used a great analogy. And it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. It's like page to 5K. You don't go and decide you're going to run a marathon and just put your shoes on and hit hell for leather for 26.2 miles.
Yeah.
Yeah, you start to walk, you do a 5K, you'll do a 10K, you know, and then we do this, you know, we start to talk to staff. We have regular review meetings. We do some check-ins with them. We start to gather some data. We have some feedback sessions. What works, what doesn't work? What would you like to see? We consult with staff, and we break it down into a really simple model. Act, yeah?
Mm.
Ask people what in the workplace is impacting their well-being, how often it impacts them and how severely. Consult with them when they've told you. So you've told us this, so now we want to invite you in to have a discussion with us.
Yeah.
And tell us what we can do to resolve some of those issues. And then together we take action.
I like that.
Dead simple.
Oh, I'm going to write that down. That's a good one, that is.
Just copyright that, mate.
I copyrighted that.
Yeah. Call it the ACT model.
I really like that. I think that's nice. I like little things like that, that people can just kind of, you know, use that as like a heuristic in their
yeah, brain. I don't feel like I've made it unless I've got my own three-letter acronym for my business. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you've got to have a three-letter acronym.
If there's even a good three-letter acronym. I think that's really nice. I like that. And I think, though, like, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it was actually Peter that who you do the podcast with, and I invited him along when I was the head of safety for the Glass and Glazing Federation. I brought him along to do a webinar for our members, and he was quite blunt in the beginning. It was really good, and I love him. Like, I've had a couple of chats with him, like one to one, and I'm like, oh, mate, I need to go for a pint with you, like.
You could join him in his online pub, you know.
Yeah. Has it moved over from the coffee lunchtime to the pub now, is it? Online pub?
Oh, he's always had both.
Oh, has he? Oh,
yeah, you can go on. If you go on later in the afternoon, you can pop into the pub. Word of warning, it's quite difficult to get out.
That's
fine. I'm only kidding.
But yeah, and he literally was just like, it was a Zoom call, and he was like, oh, just put your digital hands up if you've got a stress risk assessment, and only one company. And we had a few members in there put the hand up, and he said, everyone else who hasn't put the hand up, I can enforce on you now.
Yeah, he said, absolutely.
You need a stress risk assessment within your organisation, and you just saw, like, the faces kind of just go, and it was just like, holy shit. And I was a bit like, told you so. I've been trying to help you, but it was really nice that he was blunt. And then I mean, you know what he's like. Then he was just really helpful from there onwards and gave them loads of advice, helped move forward. But it was just that little wake-up call that I think a lot of us needed. And I think it's really interesting when you kind of go into organizations, and to come back to your point, I think a lot of people just don't know where to start with this stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you know, if we go back to this, that's why we started this business.
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly what we do. You don't know where to start. That's absolutely fine not to know where to start, but it's absolutely not fine not to start and not to do anything because you don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know how to drive a car. You don't not ever drive a car.
Yeah.
You go and learn how to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise, we'd all be sat in on our asses wearing nappies still, you know? We learn to do things.
I also wonder as well, though, Sheila, like, do we overcomplicate it a lot? Like,
hugely.
I think we think, oh, stress risk assessment, like, I need a psychologist. And I think 100%, there's a point where there's a line where, like, it stops being a job for a generalist or a manager, and it starts becoming, I need a specialist. But ultimately, I think you can go. I think I can go to TikTok for like 2 minutes and see symptoms of bad management that's like encouraging stress. I saw one the other day, and a lady I follow, and she went, "Oh, I realized really early on in my career that the reward for being efficient is you get given more work." And I was just like, that's such a good little analogy, isn't it? Like,
absolutely,
what you said, we're stretching the elastic band, and we found the point where they're doing really well and they're really efficient because they've stretched to a nice level of stress, and they're pushing themselves and they're being challenged, and they're thriving within it. So what we go and do is we give them more, and then they get that done. And then we go, oh, wow, they're just...
So it breaks. Can I stretch it?
And then we give them some more. And then and then it snaps. And then we go, Sheila's just a bit soft.
She's a bit of a flake.
Shame, because she used to be good back in the day. But you know what it's like now. Get rid of her for a couple of weeks and then bring her back and just reduce her workload. But then once Sheila starts feeling better because her workload's reduced, you then put...
Absolutely. Or Sheila's never the same again because she's got... you know, the kind of workplace stress equivalent of PTSD.
Yeah, exactly. And I just,
you know what I mean? Because at that point, that individual then feels weak. They feel like they lose self-confidence, they lose self-esteem, and you run the risk of potentially not getting that whole person back
ever. Yeah.
In your work organization, and that person has to work on rebuilding themselves. I know, because I know that from personal experience, you know. But just picking up, James, on what you just said there about at some point we need a specialist, when we're looking at this, say that this health and safety piece, well, I don't really know that. I'm not a psychologist. What I would say is, if you're a health and safety professional and you're risk assessing a construction site or a digger or a farmer in a field with a big, one of them big, nasty combine harvester things that chop people up before in them, do you need to be a specialist about how the machine works?
Very good.
Or do you bring in a specialist engineer when you identify the need for one?
I like that. That's a good point. As a safety professional, we can facilitate the kind of act like a GP in a way. It's like, this doesn't seem right. This doesn't seem right.
No, as a safety professional, you use the basic risk management principles that you've got.
Yeah.
So we do, you know, the risk assessment. And that risk assessment might throw out that, 75% of people in a high risk environment. So 75% of scaffolders, for example, have said that they are scoring really high on burnout. Yeah.
Yeah.
You've flagged a risk there. Yeah. And then what do we then do? That you wouldn't know, there's no way that you would want that health and safety professional to go in there and try and resolve burnout. They would then flag up in your organizational risk register, this is a red area of concern.
Mm-hmm.
This has the potential for high accident rates in a physical level. And this also has potential for kind of high absence rates, et cetera, et cetera. What are we going to do about it? We need to find an engineer or a provider to resolve this for us. And we need to understand what's contributing to that. And that might be the pressures on a site that are coming from, you know, unrealistic completion dates that are causing things to be shortcutted for safety. Yeah. When it comes to workplace mental health and people's mental health, we throw all logic out the window. And we go into panic mode, thinking that we need to know how to be softly, softly. Ditch the fluff. Go back to some of the structure of the processes that we already have. You're already doing it. I'm just going to tell you, these are a different set of hazards, and this is a different bunch of questions to ask.
Mm.
But pull the results together in the same way, or a similar way. Do you know what I mean? You're using the same principles. And this is the problem. Everybody's out there trying to reinvent the wheel. You've got the wheels, yeah? But you've got three at the minute. You've got quality. You've got safety, yeah? You've got customer service. But your fourth wheel on your wagon, your people, your culture, your environment, you're not applying any of those three sets. Because within quality, within safety, with all those things I've just said, you're using the same principles. You're using the same principles, but well-being, oh, it's got people involved in it. That must be different. I need to do something different. No, quality's got people involved in it. Customer satisfaction's got people involved in it. Safety's got people involved in it. You just do the same bloody thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. I was going to question, really, like, is the safety profession competent to be doing this? So I think that's you've kind of answered that question.
What I would also add to that, though, James, is that it's not just the safety profession's responsibility. Again, going back to what I said earlier, it's everybody's responsibility. Somebody needs to own it as a driver of that within an organisation.
Right.
But health and safety can't necessarily do it on their own. There might be some people stuff that needs to come in. It might be a change in HR process practices, or it might be a change in management or in leadership, or a change in operations. So it needs to be this top level approach. Again, you know, we don't have just safety professionals responsible for safety. Going back to what I said before, the whole jazz hands, we're all responsible for safety. Everybody has to. It has to be a cross-functional, cross-organisational approach. Otherwise, it will fall over.
It's an interesting topic, isn't it? Because it seems to bounce around a lot of people, like who owns it within an organisation. Like, I feel like you've got a bit of tug of war for like mental health and well-being between like HR and health and safety, like who wants to own it. And I don't know whether like both, I don't know, this is me just speaking like from observing the world that I see. And like, it just feels like both professions are tugging at it to try and show that they're still relevant in a way. Like they both have our own brands and our own things that we're struggling with, like the preconception of safety and so on and so forth, preconception of HR, hire, fire and all of that. They've both got their own little preconceptions that they're struggling with. And it feels a bit like we've gone, oh, let's take stress and well, and we're kind of tugging at it from each other. Mm-hmm. We're like fighting as to who takes it. Would you have an opinion on, does it matter who takes it as long as somebody
as takes it? As long as it gets done, doesn't matter.
So you don't you think know? One profession is better to have it than the other?
I think they've all got value to add. I think there's, you know, if you look at 45,003, yeah, it's been specifically put under an occupational health and safety management system. It's a health and safety issue.
Yeah, okay.
It's the health bit of a safety issue. Yeah. However, it involves people. And a lot of the standard would look at competency, resources, yeah, development, leadership. So it needs input from HR. It needs input from other areas in the business. So it can't just be, yes, one person can be the driver for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we all own a piece of responsibility that goes with that. And this is why it's vital that it's a strategic boardroom agenda item.
Mm.
This is why it's vital that it's making it onto risk registers, that we've got these same processes in place. You know, I even say, you know, have people got a mental health policy? No. Have you got a health and safety policy? Yeah. So my suggestion would always be, don't dilute mental health by having a separate policy. Potentially, yeah? You've already got a health and safety policy. Just make sure you do the health bit.
I think
make sure you're more specific on the health bit, because if you then go, this is health and safety, so we all do that, and we know when we join an organisation, we have to do that safety bit. We have to watch the fire training, the manual handling courses. We have to do this, that, and the other. Make the mental health piece part of that process. If you're telling people when they're joining your organization, we recognize this, it's a value to us, it's of importance to us, your well-being is a value to us, and we have systems and we have mechanisms in place to make sure that we're keeping you safe psychologically and physically throughout all the time that you spend with us, because we care that you do good work, because ultimately, let's not be fluffy about this, we care that you do good work, because the better work that you do, the more successful we are as an organization.
I think it's really interesting that you said don't dilute mental health by having a standalone policy. I think a lot of people would think that they're doing the opposite of that and giving it its pedestal that it deserves, right?
Yeah.
And like, oh, it's really important to us. So it doesn't, we don't want to dilute it by just having it part of health and safety. What we're going to do is put it a standalone piece. I think it's really interesting that you've come at that from the complete opposite by saying having it as a standalone dilutes it.
Potentially. And again, like anything in this, right? That's just my opinion. That's what I would do in my business. Yeah. But exactly what you've just said, in some organizations, the nature and the culture of that organization, that might be more suited to have it as a separate policy. You know, they've got it that way. And having it as a separate policy in that particular organization, organization X, might actually be of a benefit because the employees like it that way. Yeah. Because they know that you live and breathe it. So they're really proud of the fact that you've got that.
Yeah.
But this is the thing. We try to fit square pegs into round holes when it comes to workplace mental health. Okay. Yeah. What goes back to what I said right the way back about implementing frameworks. Yeah. And it's you do the bits that apply to you in the way that work for your business.
Mm.
If you don't, it's not going to work.
Mm.
So it's got to be organization fit, value fit, people fit, and you've got to ask your people along the way.
What I love about what you're saying here, right, is that like that within safety, particularly within health and safety, but not just within health and safety, I think everywhere. We are addicted to trying to find one simple solution. Step one, two, three, four, and five. And that's how we manage X. Step 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And that's how we manage it. Where did you get that? Or we nicked that off DuPont, or we nicked that off Coca-Cola, or whatever, right? And I think ultimately, like, if you look at, say, 45,001, I had a meeting with a prospective client a few weeks ago, and they said, oh, you know, can we get 45,001? I said, yeah, 100%. How much will it cost? I said, I'll tell you what, it'll cost more to get it from me than it will from maybe a couple of other companies. And I'll tell you why, because to what we said earlier, you know, I want to try and implement in your company to the spirit of it, not the word of it. So we come back to what we said earlier. If you read through 45,001 and you read through it, it's not a step-by-step. It's a broad framework, and there are millions of ways to do what's within it.
Absolutely.
And it is, like, it might say, have this, for example, but there are like 20 different versions of this that you have. And when you get organizations that essentially maybe sell a 45,001 whatever management system, like, I'm always a bit like, but how do you know that that version of that management system is going to work? Like, it wouldn't work. So I said to them, it's going to cost more coming in for me, because I will spend a hell of a lot more time in your organization, and it will feel like I'm achieving nothing. But what I'm doing is just listening, watching, talking, and seeing what works and what doesn't work. I'm going to go home, I'm going to make a form, make a template, tweak it from something I've used somewhere else, and I'm going to bring it in. I'm going to say, try this. And then, actually, that doesn't work. And I had this the other day, and we designed a management system for another client, and the way that we had designed the kind of incident reporting process didn't work. It clashed with their fleet management and insurance. It didn't work. So we made a new one. Either of those ways were within the framework of 45,001, either or.
Absolutely.
They're completely different.
Yeah.
And it was just like, there's a bit of not a frustration, I suppose, but like, well, there is a frustration from a business owner point of view, that it's like, they'll come to me and my quote will be X thousands more than somebody else. And you're like, yeah, but I think we'll genuinely, if you give us a chance, I think you'll see long-term more return on investment than you would
to the
letter of the law kind of thing.
Yeah. And just to kind of, I just wanted to kind of go back on some of the numbers on 45,001, because I found them now. I couldn't remember them off the top of my head. But in 2018, because, you know, ISO release the stats, don't they, every 3 years of the numbers of certificates that there are. So in across all the 10 major ISO accreditations, there were 1.7 million certifications recorded worldwide.
Right.
And
that's for all of them?
All of them. Right. 11% are for 45,001. But in 2018, there were only 45,001 certificates issued, okay? Which makes sense, because it was relatively new from 18,001.
Yeah.
In 2019, it went up to 38,000.
Wow.
Guess what it is in 2020?
I'll try to tell you, on that rate of, so in 1 year, it went from 11 to 38. If it was to continue at that rate, Jesus, it must be like 60-something%.
Does it mean 60,000?
So how many were they at? 38,000, 11,000 to 38. I'm terrible.
Call it 12,000 to 39,000 rough numbers.
Right. Yeah. 60,
70.
195,000. Oh, shit. I was way off.
Which is brilliant. That's 195,000 organizations that already have the management systems in place.
Yeah.
45,001 that don't have to do a massive amount of work potentially with the right tools, what the right support, working with the right organization to take them to 45,003.
What's the uptake on? Do you have figures for 45,003 on there or not?
I don't know. No. And from what I know of people that are being certified, because there's still a big education piece. People might be working to the spirit of 45,003, but they don't understand necessarily that they can get certified. Yeah. So MCOR UK was one of the first companies to get certified to 45,003 in the UK, and they got that really quickly. Yeah. And that's because they've already done the hard work. And speaking to Hayley Farrell at MCOR, you know, and I said to her about her certification, and what have you. She said, Sheila, this is literally the start of our journey.
Mm.
Yeah. This isn't where we want to end up. This is the beginning for us.
Yeah.
Because it's continuous. And I absolutely loved that. I absolutely loved that. That's, really that's fantastic. That's music to my ears. The fact that they're here already, they're doing the right things to get them that certification right now, but they're just seeing this is the start of their journey.
Mm.
And I thought that was fantastic.
That's lovely. I really like that.
Yeah.
Trying to find if there are any numbers, but there isn't.
There isn't yet, no.
It's probably too early on. They don't want to put out numbers, do they?
No. Yeah. And there's still a massive education piece to be done, you know, and there's been a lot of interest. I used to run free webinars on this through lockdown, and I'm going to start them up again now. I'm just planning to put them back on. And there was a lot of interest.
Yeah.
There was a lot of interest. And I'm presenting on it this afternoon to construction companies that haven't heard of it. Some of them haven't heard of it yet.
No. I think there's a lot of people that haven't heard of it. I mean, you look, like I say, there's loads of people that have never heard of the management system and the management standards from the HSC. And how long's that been out? Jesus Christ.
2004, isn't it? So phenomenal. 18 years.
So long. And that's a cracking piece of work. And it's free of charge, sitting there, download it, off you go. Yeah. And even the survey stuff that the HSC do, we did that in my last employed role, and it was a cracking little survey. And it was dirt cheap compared to some others.
Mine's better.
Quite. Jesus.
What a kidding. Well, I'm not, but there's truth in there. Brilliant.
Oh, great stuff. Like, it's I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Sheila. I think that was a good, nice conversation. I mean, it was kind of more around like how and who should do this stuff, but ultimately I know you've got a busy day and so have I, so I don't want to keep you much longer.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of closing points, anything that you didn't cover that you want to make sure that you say, or are you
happy? No, I think I told people off enough. Oh, I'll tell you what we didn't put in there was about Catch the Wave with IOSH.
Yeah, do you want to give a quick shout out to that?
So, you know, one of the other things I would recommend for health and safety professionals, I know that Louise Hoskin is really passionate about workplace mental health and the role of safety professionals in developing not what she would call soft skills, which and I love what Louise calls them. She calls them power skills in this particular area, because it's often seen as a soft skill, this space. When actually it's probably one of the hardest things to do. And there's a campaign that you should kind of pick up on either through Louise's LinkedIn page or just by Googling it, which is the Catch the Wave campaign that IOSH are running to raise awareness on kind of, you know, the role of the profession in this particular area. So if we could, kind of pop that in the show notes so that people can pick up on that one and kind of, you know, just understand what others in your profession are actually doing.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And do you want to tell us just quickly about UK Psych Health and Safety podcast, your podcast as
well? Yeah, sure. So yeah, we've been, so myself and Peter Kelly, who co-hosts the show with me, we talk to a number of different people throughout the profession. So we look to get guests on from all of these different areas. So going back to your point earlier, James, about whose responsibility is this, where does it sit? Mm-hmm. It sits with everybody. So, you know, we've interviewed occupational health professionals.
Yeah.
We've had the Society for Occupational Health on there. We've interviewed Louise from IOSH. Mm-hmm. Peter Cheese from the head of the CIPD. So there are a number of different professionals, academics, that we've interviewed, and also health and safety risk professionals, barristers and lawyers. Okay. In particular, there was a lady called Laura Thomas, who's a well-respected risk lawyer, and another chap called Gerard Fallin. And again, one of the interesting points that Gerard made is that actually in courts of law, because Gerard's a passionate advocate of 45001, and he was saying that more and more now these documents and on organizations are being asked in courts of law, you know, to what degree have you followed the guidance these standards that are available to you of 45,001, because people can no longer complain, didn't know how to do it, Gov. There isn't enough best practice out there.
Yeah. I think that's really interesting as well, because there's the HSE science division did a paper a fair few years ago now on the pitfalls and best practice for risk assessment. And one of the things they found in there was that a lot of people don't use or follow best practice. And they kind of allude to in there, like, the risk assessment becomes less of has less of a mass. I wouldn't say they were saying, I think it kind of alluded to saying, if you follow best practice, essentially, like, industry agreed best practice, so your trade association said this is the way to install X, for example, in the safest way forward, it kind of alludes to the fact that you wouldn't need to do a risk assessment. Well, I'm not saying don't do that, but it kind of alludes to it. So it kind of...
You're breaking the law if you didn't.
Yeah, but I think the message that I took away from that is just... actually how powerful and effective industry-wise best practice could be for you. So even if you're just referencing it, you're using it to inform your risk assessments and so on, I don't think the HSC as the enforcer are saying don't do a risk assessment.
No, of course.
But it kind of reads like that, and you're like, wow, that if they're writing it in that manner that it could be interpreted like that, there must be a lot of faith in those best practice. So I think that's really interesting to hear that it's coming from the courts as well now. Nice. And finally, do you want to give a little plug to your company as well? So clearly you do very good stress and well-being surveys.
We do. We don't just... So we talked about the bookends before, yeah? So lots of organisations out there do the bookends. We do the bookends, yeah? So we do offer mental health first aid training. We do offer... standalone employee assistance programs, and we do the health promotion stuff, the team building days, the nutrition, all of the stuff that you'll find in a typical wellbeing program. The bit that we do and the focus area for us, though, is really working with organizations using our digital tools to put in place a fully operation of a very systemic integrated management system.
Yeah.
Aligned to 45,003. So we can take you through 45,003 every single step of the way. We can give you all of the tools that you need to execute 45,003 every step of the way, the education piece, the resources, the training, the gap analysis, the audit on what you've currently got. So we look at that whole end-to-end process to not give you this is your quick fix for the next 3 months, but to work with you and say, okay, what are your quick wins? What are some of the quick fixes you want that are going to make you feel well?
Yeah.
They're going to tick a box, if you will. But what's your 6-month plan? What's your 12-month plan? What's your 3-year plan? What's your 5-year plan? What does a successful business with your people in it look like? And we help them to achieve that.
Nice. I like that. Yeah, you see, you got your lift, you got your elevator speech there. That was really good.
You're going to have to send me the recording now, so I go back and type it up.
Me phone. What's your elevator pitch? Play.
Well, check me out.
You got that done in your 60 seconds.
I don't think I could say anything in 60 seconds. I talk too much.
Sheila, thank you very much for that.
No worries.
We'll get your website, your email address and phone number and stuff, and we'll put that in the show notes as well. So thank you very much, Sheila, for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
Okay, peeps, hope you enjoyed that conversation. Thank you very much, Sheila, for coming on. We'll put all the links to everything in the description below. Put the links to the podcast in the description below so you can go and check that out. I'll put the links to the management standard below as well, because I've mentioned that quite a few times. And also, obviously, 45,003. We'll link the kind of live reader so you can get it free. All linked below. If you need any support of this stuff, we'll link Sheila's company as well. If you need any support, technical, transformational risk management stuff, or the media services as well, we'll put the links to riskfluentlimited.com, my email address and more in the description below. Don't forget to follow us on social media. Guess where the links for that are? In the description below. Oh, yes. Other than that, catch you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.